The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast. It's a Wednesday edition in 2021. It's good to have a couple podcasts during the week, of course, as we get you ready for the national championship. Scheduled on Monday. I say scheduled because there was some doubt earlier this week as we taped this on Wednesday, concerns about COVID within the Ohio State program. Great to have David Pollock here with us. If you enjoy the podcast, you can subscribe, rate, and review. Subscribing and rating, we love that, and the review, the feedbacks, it makes the show better. Pollock, there's a lot of things to talk about as we tape this on Wednesday because a very fluid situation. It seems like that is the theme of the college football season, where whatever we say now on a Wednesday morning could change Wednesday afternoon or Thursday. But we know one thing for sure. Trevor Lawrence, news coming out this morning, not a big surprise, declaring for the NFL draft as he finished second last night in the Heisman Trophy ceremony behind Devontae Smith. We had Trevor on SportsCenter last night. He basically all but said his decision was coming, and he was basically saying goodbye to Clemson. So not a surprise as he now gets ready for, you know, the next step in his career, and that is playing on Sundays. And that looks like a Jaguar uniform, playing in Duval County and getting ready for his NFL career. Back to another topic here, and that is we're keeping an eye on if we're going to have a game on Monday. One story that kind of, you know, you turn your head and you're like, whoa, hey, I'm surprised by that, is Nick Saban's daughter going to Twitter yesterday and calling out, if you're not confident to play, then say it. I call BS on the COVID cases in reference to Ohio State. They're just worried about their quarterback and want him to have more time to heal. If he's hurt, put in your backup. You didn't see us postpone the rest of the season, the wait for Waddle. I'm sure that's how many fans feel at Alabama, but for Nick Saban's daughter to come out, that was the surprise. And then she deleted the tweet. She apologized. Yeah,
I think Papa got a hold of that pretty quickly.
Oh yeah. Well, the account's gone, dude. The account's done. Like, you know. Oh, yeah. So
I think Nick shut her down pretty quick on that.
Providing a little rat poison on the other side inside the Ohio State locker room. But, you know, one of the things she did bring up was, hey, we didn't make excuses for Jaylen Waddle, and that transitions to this story. And Nick Saban saying that Jaylen Waddle is practicing this week. I mean, let's not forget, he broke his ankle at the end of October in the Tennessee game. And Pollock, I want to get your thoughts on a couple things about this, because there can be a little bit of gamesmanship here, because if you put that out there, suddenly now you're taking time game planning for Ohio State's defense with an extra guy, whether he's going to play or not. And then you still have to also be prepared for Jaylen Waddle to play. So what are your initial thoughts on this story coming out that Waddle could return a lot sooner than many expected?
As far as that's concerned, I don't really see him coming out and playing now. And maybe there's a role, hopefully, for the kid because he's rehabbed really hard. Hopefully there's a role where maybe I could see him playing on a snap count of like 15 and maybe being 15 impactful snaps, you know, like using his speed. But he's been out. He's rusty, you know, running routes, rusty, timing, rusty, game speed, rusty. A lot of that would be difficult to jump right back in. And now you do it in the biggest game of the year. But I do think there's a lot of merit to messing with Ohio State, because I just got news for you. When those two stacked up, when 6 and 17 stacked behind each other, Smith and Waddle, and you watch that on tape, you're like, oh, my God. Like, what on God's green earth do I do? Like, literally, I was like, this is the if I'm a DB, this is the most miserable thing I've ever had to deal with in my life. I mean, literally, that's how hard it is. Because when you stack release, you can't get your hands on both of them. They can both run vertically together. One can cut in, both can cut in. One can go out. It doesn't put you in a position to put your hands on them and feel them and kind of, you know, deflect them and make them go a direction you might want them to go. So I think it's a scary proposition. Now, listen, it would make me right, by the way, because if Waddle comes back and they win a title, because it's because Waddle came back, that would make me kind of my prediction. I would enjoy that thoroughly. But no, I think that it's a long shot. I love that. I'll be honest. When I heard the COVID news, That was the first thing I thought. When I heard about in my head, I go, Ohio State probably wants to buy some time for Justin Fields to get a little bit healthier. Mm-hmm. Because, again, practice is going to be the hard part for Justin right now. Like, the game, I think he'll be fine. He'll have that good juice in him, that go-go juice. He'll have plenty of that on him. I think he'll feel good, but, you know, he's not going to be out there in practice getting as many reps and when he's trying to probably heal his ribs as much as he possibly could. So I think it's an interesting topic. It's crazy that I didn't know that Saban messed up. I didn't know that his family was allowed to do stuff like that. That's nuts. I didn't think that was legal. I didn't think Saban would ever have something like that happen from his family. I figured he'd have everybody trusting the process and trained in the process by now.
Yeah, that's what was the surprise, right? It was like, wait a second, and the family has Twitter accounts?
Who knew?
Sweet stuff and opinions? We joke, of course, but this is the type of tight ship he runs, and you can bring that up with Alabama football players, and look what they've done, the success that they've had this season when it comes to testing and when it comes to the idea of opting out. No, they're star players. We're staying, and we're going to finish this season, some unfinished business from a year ago, and how they lost to LSU and kind of got the bad taste out of their mouth with the run that they've had this season. Before we get into the breakdown of the matchup, I want to get your thoughts because I was with you in New Orleans, and you know, we briefly talked, going in and out in between while watching that game. Your first reaction, and now some time to kind of let the dust settle here on what Justin Fields pulled off and the play calling, the play design that we saw from Ryan Day matched up against Brett Venables, and how Ohio State just decided, you know what, we're going to pull some things out you haven't seen this season. Let's get the tight ends involved early. And Trey Sermon looking like the Trey Sermon we saw in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, Trey Sermon set the tone. Justin Fields, I know that everybody at home, if you got hit like that, would be in a body bag for like 7 weeks. You wouldn't be able to walk. And to think about the shot he took and the way he battled and it was amazing to watch a competitor at that high of a level. And after the game, I was like, listen, I'm doing this for my brothers. I ain't leaving them hanging. So it was just awesome to see that. It was awesome to be a part of that heroic story. But I thought Ohio State had a clear identity of what they wanted to be, of who they wanted to be. They came in and they smashed the football. They were going to run the football, be exceptionally physical. I love the way they set the tone with that. And I tell you what, their offense morphed, which I really like. It wasn't the typical – like, I think when this season started – I don't think, I know. When this season started, the first couple weeks, Ryan Day was trying to prove to us how great Justin Fields is. And he was letting him cook. It looked like Russell Wilson. Like, he's letting him do his thing. This is his team. We saw – in other stretches, specifically Northwestern, where when you do that, you got in trouble. Now we see what? Now we see balance. Kevin, any offense works best with balance. Like, if Mac Jones was throwing the football every single time down the field, I think he would struggle. I don't think it would be as easy all that offense would come as easy. So I think that they've created balance now and a commitment to the run game that more play action, more – by the way, so Brent Venables last year in the matchup with not this past year, a season ago, when they played, they got down early. Brent Venables went to the Iowa State three safety look, really three down, really confused Ohio State, confused Justin Fields. When they went to that look, actually, they forced three interceptions. So most of all the mistakes Justin had and Ryan Day had as a play caller was against that three safety look. They were more than ready for that this time. Venables threw it at him, and they're like, all right, you're not going to protect the middle of the field. We're just going to drop bombs. I mean, literally, middle of the field, middle of the field, middle of the field, middle of the field. It was crazy how much they attacked the middle of the field. And by the way, the easiest throw for quarterbacks is the middle of the field. You know, if you're going to throw deep shots, it's easier to throw them when the guy's 10 yards removed as opposed to being all the way to the sideline 25 yards removed. So I know as a DC, I'm just telling you right now, like when I play Ohio State, I'm not giving up the middle of the field. But creative Ryan Day, creative play calling, Trey Sermon, an offensive line that came ready to play and just hit him in the mouth over and over and over again. And Ohio State played their best game at their at the biggest moment on the biggest stage.
On the other side, you know, the big story, you can't ignore Tony Elliott not being there, especially when you're trying to figure things out. And now you're down by a couple of touchdowns, and Ohio State's defensive front was phenomenal, you know, led by Haskell and Togiai. When that's going on, were you surprised at some of the play calling and the decision making? Because it felt like, wait a second, you've got Trevor Lawrence who's got – we understand about his legs, but Ohio State has now said, we're going to nullify you running the football. We need to make you a passer. Were you surprised on how Clemson struggled to find any type of rhythm when it came to pushing the ball down the field and throwing?
Clemson came out with a great rhythm and scored twice in a row.
Yes, wow. They did. And then afterwards.
Well, why? Because Tony Elliott's script, I think, was to start the game. Like, I think they laid it out. They practiced it. It was really good. I'm not here to make an excuse for Clemson. Not having Tony Elliott was a big deal. I mean, you could see throughout the game it was a huge deal. And Tony Elliott might get a raise off of this, by the way, for God's sakes. I mean, it was unbelievable, the difference. But when I look at this offense, and we talked about it. We talked about it on this podcast. I said Ohio State's better on the offensive line. Ohio State's way better at receiver. Like, I don't think Trevor Lawrence – supporting cast is even close to Justin Fields. That's not even in the same ballpark. But Trevor Lawrence made it go. Ohio State, Kev, with their alignment by design, what they wanted to do, they literally was like, listen, we're going to punk you inside. We're not going to allocate all these numbers to be sound inside and to take away the inside run. You can't block our guys. And they couldn't. Did a good job on the outside playing the mesh point with RPOs, with the zone read, and making Trevor hesitate and kind of playing in the middle. Linebackers and stayed in too high safety most of the time. Started off, you know, bailing big time. Got ate up for it and said, okay, we're going to play. We're going to mix it up a little bit more. We're going to blitz. They blitzed more this game than they had in previous games and in the past. So I think, again, it was a great game plan. I think it exposed Clemson's, you know, their flaws in – on the offensive line, their flaws at wide receiver. And it's not their fault. Justin Ross got hurt and Nada got hurt. I mean, there's so many guys that have been banged up all season long, right? Like, they haven't just been able to play. And, you know, Dabo even said that. If you'd told me that to this point that we'd have still been playing with all those injuries at wide receiver, I'd have told you that I'd have been shocked. So Trevor Lawrence couldn't overcome all of that. And Ohio State's defense played exceptionally well. And listen, you need another one, bro. You need another one, because you're going to have to play just like you did, but even better and more sound. And it's just a tough proposition, the offense you're about to see.
You know, before the game, I did a bunch of previews with Booger McFarland, and he predicted Ohio State would win because they would make it into a street fight. If they can make it into a street fight, they're going to win. Do you think, heading into a game like this against Bama, which has a completely different type of roster and depth on the defensive side than we saw at Clemson, do you think Ohio State should make this into a street fight on the lines, offense and defensive lines, to succeed in a game like this? Or what's going to be the key in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think that I don't think the problem with Alabama is, you know, like Clemson, you could do a really good job of saying, okay, your fastball is this. I'm going to make you throw the off-speed pitch the whole game. And you could do that to them. You can't do that to Alabama, because their off-speed pitch is just as good as their fastball. And by the way, they're willing to throw their off-speed pitch. And running the football with Najee Harris and Duo in the power game up front, with the offensive line being so stout and so physical, they move people. They combo up to backers so well. They're a complete dialed-in group that plays so great together. And you got a guy like 22 that, by the way, I'm not sure I've seen a more improved player from start to finish of his career that was really highly recruited than Najee Harris. Because when I watched him as a freshman, I was like, you're telling me that's 6'2", you know, 230-ish? But he didn't have a clue how to play running back and set up blocks, and he didn't know how to read things. He was just young and go fast or bounce. And now he sets up blocks, and then Devontae Smith and the passing game. It's just it's a lot more complete offense. So, no, I don't think they can do that. This is going to be a I got to get 30. I got to get 40 to put in this game coming in. I know I got to score in bunches. So it will change the defensive game plan. And it's just it's honest to God, it infuriates me to watch the Alabama offense as a defensive guy because I don't have answers. I mean, like last year when I saw LSU, I was like, I don't know what I would do. Like, I can tell you what I would do to a lot of teams and try to shut them down. But I mean, OK, I went back and watched a bunch of games, Alabama games. So I looked at the Arkansas game. Arkansas by far did the best job of limiting their passing. I think Smitty had 28 yards in the Arkansas game. Okay. They had 200 yards passing, Kevin, in that game. They rushed 3, dropped 8, played deep, and said, take the under. When you do that, what do you have to do, though? You have to tackle. So you have to get Devontae. And you saw that in Notre Dame game, right? Just, okay, you play off. I'll motion Devontae in. I'll dump it to him and let Minchie block. And he's a phenomenal blocker. And you tackle him. So that's what Ohio State's, you know, going to have to do. If you want to do that and drop back, you got to tackle Smitty. And Arkansas did the best job of that. They held him to 200-something yards passing. It was 38-3, Kevin. Like, they still scored a bunch of points, but that's the plan I would use. I can't get aggressive. I can't get frustrated. I got to say, you know what? They're going to get a ton of yards, and maybe when I get in the red zone, I can get stops when the field shrinks and I can catch these guys a little bit better. But there's no game plan to stop the offense. It's got answers, and it's got a quarterback, by the way, that the biggest strength of Mac Jones is his accuracy. Another big strength for Mac Jones is his ability to move in the pocket. Mac Jones does not mind checking the football down. That might be his greatest strength because he's got 22 who he can just dump it to and say, okay, you go tackle him, because most of the time he's going to get 10 off of that. And so you got to cover all these weapons and double team with a great scheme, and then I'm going to dump it to him. And it's just, it's tough, man. It's tough as a defensive guy to try to figure it out.
Yeah, and to your point with Arkansas, okay, so Mac Jones doesn't throw a touchdown pass. And some people pointed at, hey, maybe that's the game he doesn't win the Heisman because, you know, they still found a way to put up 52 points. They put up 52 points, and Mac Jones doesn't have a touchdown pass. Najee Harris is held under 50 yards, and Devontae Smith has 3 catches and 22 yards. Oh, by the way, an 84-yard punt return. It just gives you an idea. I thought your comparison as a pitcher was perfect here, because it's not just the changeup and the fastball. It's the cutter. It's the slider. They have literally every single pitch in their arsenal, where they come in one night and, you know what, the fastball is not working tonight, so we're going to do something else. And that something else is still the best thing, and you can't hit it. That's the thing that really stands out in your explanation to me.
Yeah, and I don't know how you stop it. Now, listen, hey, Arkansas doesn't have Justin Fields and Olave, and now Ole Miss, what did they do? They tempoed the mess out of them. But here's another thing too. Early in the season, Alabama really struggled with tempo, really struggled, you know, getting lined up. I remember watching them play Missouri, and they struggled just, you know, communicating and stuff like that. Got, you know, young safeties, young star guy and Malachi Moore that's starting for the, you know, all season. But as the season went on, they got much better with the tempo, and they got much better with shifts and motions. That being said, Florida scored 40. You know, like, I think Justin Fields has the weapons to score a bunch of points and to be very successful. So, you know, Notre Dame could play the I'm going to keep it away from you and limit you. Notre Dame limited them to 4 possessions in the first half. They scored on 3 of them. It's only 21 points. That's not horrible. Like, that's kind of winning. So if Ohio State can do the same with Trey Sermon and run the ball and use their tempo. And by the way, I think important to note how they use their tempo. And me and you talked about this in the elevator right when you were leaving. So Brent Venables, notorious for wanting the sign perfect and his call in at the last second so he can adjust to the offensive formation. I love what Ohio State did. First couple possessions, what'd they do? Fast. Boom. Go up to the line of scrimmage, snap it. Go up to the line of scrimmage, snap it. Then they started changing their rhythm. Then they came up there. They waited for the play clock to get to 10. At 10, they would turn and look to the sidelines. They would all look down, and at 6, they would have the snap off. You would look over to Brent Venables' crew. What were they doing? Looking to the sidelines. getting the play call, communicating the play call, and Ohio State snapping the ball. So hard to adjust, hard to play tendencies, hard to say, you know, they like this out of this when you're just trying to get your call and understand what the heck's going on. I thought Ohio State did a masterful job of that. So tempo could be their friend as well in this ball game.
And well, one thing we're seeing the last couple weeks, or at least the last couple games from the Buckeyes, that offensive line is hungry. They want the physicality. They will mash you. And Trey Sermon looks like he's 100% healthy. Let's not forget he had the knee injury at Oklahoma, slow start, trying to figure things out. And it was really Master Teague early on. But Sermon has that next level. And the one thing that really stood out in the last two games, man, when he hits a hole, he hits it hard and he's already running downhill. When you watch him, what do you see?
I see the ability to stick my foot in the ground and go now. I see a lot of physicality, a lot of energy, by the way. Like, he gets up and he's got juice, man. He's excited. Remember, he's been in the college football playoff every year, by the way. Every year. And this year didn't change for him. Oklahoma didn't make it. He did. So he's used to this. Like, but he's got a lot of strength and a lot of just energy running through tackles. He's fresh, I think, by the way. Not having a bunch of carries on his body. I think it's helped him stay fresh, and he's just running with anger, with his quickness and suddenness and decisiveness. And it gives them a good chance, man. Cause I think you got to have balance. You got to be able to keep Alabama off balance. And I think he's the key. He's the reason, by the way, he's the reason they're there. If they didn't have Trey Sermon, I don't think they would be there, because his physicality and his ability to run the football now opens up that play action that is benefiting Justin Fields now, like you saw in the Clemson game.
Yeah, I don't think they win the Northwestern game. The way Fields struggled throwing the football in the second half, and no Olave, I don't think they win that game if Sermon doesn't go off.
Master Teague is not on the level of Trey Sermon. It's not an insult to him. He's just not.
No.
Like, Master Teague is – I think Master Teague is a good back, but when you look at Trey Sermon and his explosiveness and stuff, I'll tell you what, the wild card for me will be, because, you know, Master T couldn't play, but Mayan Williams, did you see that big sucker?
Yes. He looked like Beanie Wells, right?
Yes.
Whoa, that guy, who's that? He's huge.
Dude, he's 5'8", 230. Do you know how much that sucks, tackling that kind of a human being? It's like tackling a tree stump, bro. It sucks. And by the way, he's a freshman, but showed some good quickness and a quick jump cut. Like, dude, I literally watched him and I was like, man, I wouldn't want to tackle that. He had, like, I think he had like 10 carries for 60 something yards. And he was, man, I saw him come in and I was like, okay, let's see what we look like without Trey Sermon. And I saw that cat and I was like, oh, he's different. That dude's going to be pretty good.
And he wants contact. It was a different type of change of pace there. And again, I thought Ryan Day's play calling was brilliant. Can't do it, though, unless your quarterback delivers. And Justin Fields giving us an all-time game in the lore when it comes to the history of Ohio State. Everybody will say, you know, I mentioned this on Monday, you know, that Big Ten game was the Trey Sermon game, right? The Sugar Bowl was the, you know, it'll go down as the Justin Fields game. Regardless of what happens on Monday night against Alabama, those two games, when they look back, they'll be like, oh, remember the Justin Fields game? And yeah, everybody will go back to.
And by the way, to get to this point, Kevin, and to win a national championship, you have to have a Justin Fields game, a Trey Sermon game, a Devontae Smith game, a Najee Harris game. You don't get here unless you have multiple people that can hurt you. It's one-man wrecking crews don't work. Like, you have to have other dudes that can make plays. And you're seeing that in college football all across the country. It's got to be more than just one guy.
Yeah, and you can make a case that Chris Olave shared that as well with Justin Fields and Garrett Wilson. I thought Garrett Wilson with the big catch in the first half, tracking that ball, the 47-yarder, it's a huge credit to him. Out the gate,
worst pass of the game. Worst pass of the game by Justin, probably.
It was, and he saved his quarterback, right? Really well done by Garrett. All right, this game in your mind will come down to what? Is this like, hey, it's the defense making the last stop on the last possession, or the offense making a play? What will this game come down to? The one single thing.
I feel like this is a cop-out and it's kind of stupid, but it comes down to who makes mistakes. You know, it comes down to who's going to turn the football over? Who's that? That's what I just don't understand. It's absurd, Kevin. Like, I don't get how Mac Jones, Alabama, and Najee are playing so great, but they don't get holding penalties. They don't fumble the football. They don't throw interceptions. They don't make mistakes, homie. Like, they just don't do it. And, you know, Justin Fields, obviously down the stretch, has made more mistakes. And, you know, he made a big mistake in the end zone that I think the game was over if he scores on that first possession in the second half when he throws it, you know, in the end zone. He gets his hand hit. I think it was a bad decision regardless, unless he was throwing it in the third row. But I think it comes down to decision-making and making those mistakes in big games and stealing a possession or two, because, you know, with these offenses, if you get that possession, that extra possession, that second extra possession, you're probably going to lose.
Okay. So we'll see who makes the mistake. And you're right, though, because I think their turnover ratio is like 11. Like, they just literally do not make mistakes all season long.
But that's like watching Joe Burrow last year. It's that's bull crap, man. I need you to give me something, for God's sakes. Like, you can't
look human, right? Like,
you can't
look human.
Keep doing that. Yes, it's not fun. It's not fair, by the way. Like, at some point, and listen, this is an off-season topic, but like, we gotta fix the defense in college football, and it starts with the rules. Like, we gotta help our defensive guys out a little bit.
I'm not gonna do that.
I guess I'm the only one that likes an offense to actually have to earn it against the defense. Like, that's, I'm not saying we limit it to 3-2 like Auburn, Mississippi State, or 10-3 like Alabama, LSU. But I mean, can we get it back in the middle a little bit? Like, you already get the shifts and motions and RPOs and all that stuff. Can we limit the blocking downfield to like 1 yard, like the NFL? I think it would make it more fun.
I to a certain extent, I agree, but the way the consumer is and the way the game has changed when it comes to spreading things out in the college game, it's just more points, more points, and more points, right? And that was a huge thing last year. Shoot, that's been the last 5 years on the SEC shift, right? And, hey, let's spread everything out and let's see if you can stop us. And
it started everybody doing it to Nick, and Nick was pissed off, and Nick was like, all right, I'll do it just at a better level.
And then exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly. And you know, it's incredible that we've been talking, what, 30 minutes on a podcast about Alabama getting ready for a national championship, and we haven't brought up one defensive player. And Bama's loaded with some defensive guys, but we haven't brought up one single.
That's not true. I talked about Malachi Moore. I mentioned his name.
Okay. But we haven't caught it. You know, Dylan Moses, Sertan on the outside. We haven't done anything. And those are the guys that you're going to hear on draft day in that first round. And when you look at those guys, like, is it just because this is where our focus is? We're obsessed with the offense, or, you know, just these defenses are not up to speed on what they were in years past?
I think, first of all, I thought, and I was completely wrong. I thought the offenses might be a little bit rusty. But what we found out is the defenses are a lot rustier than the offenses. And I think, you know, and somebody actually said it throughout the season, and it kind of blew one of the coaches. They're like, listen, we can practice our routes on air and we can develop our timing. And the way we've taken physicality out of the game, like, you kind of, he was right. I was like, yeah, I guess the offenses were way ahead and hard to catch up. But as good as those guys are and as highly as they'll be drafted, it's just like years past, they're still going to give up a ton of points. You know, I mean, if you look at, if I look at Alabama, Christian Barrymore, he's a heck of a defensive tackle. Like, he can rush the passer really, really good. He's a big, strong kid. Doesn't look like it, but he's like 6'5", 310-ish, and he can dominate a football game. But he can't dominate a football game like Jonathan Allen. He can't dominate a football game like Quinnen Williams. And that's where Bama's, you know, different to me. You know, I think Sertan matching up on Olave is going to be a big deal and maybe something that decides the game. Like, that's a huge matchup that you'd love to see. Christian Harris, Dylan Moses are good players, but I don't expect Alabama's defense, as good as the individual talent is, I don't expect them to continually stop Ohio State, and I don't expect them to hold them under 30 points, 28 points. I think they'll get theirs.
Yeah, so it feels like you're taking the over in a game like this. And We'll see how that plays out. The other storyline here is this will be the last game for Steve Sarkisian as the OC at Alabama, as he will now take over at Texas. You had an interesting day on Saturday, was it? Like with the tweets weighing in back and forth. And, you know, how did that play out in your mind with the, this decision by Sark to go to Texas?
You know, it's an interesting thing because Texas seems like it should be the best job and one of the best jobs in the country. Like, I think when you say it, people automatically go, that's a really good job. Texas has won two championships in 52 years. Like, they're not a blue blood program, I think, that people think they are. Can they be? Yes. I mean, should they be? Yes. I feel like they should be. But there's so much dysfunction with that organization. Here's what I mean. Kevin, do you think Tom Herman's a good coach?
I do think he's a good coach. But here's you said one thing I want to stand out here. Okay. That a lot of people believe that Texas, you know, is a blue blood program. I think this begins with the conversation within how the trustees, how the alumni view themselves. And that is that we've gone through this with a handful of programs on who they really are and what they are, right? Like where the trustees and the alumni at Michigan believe where they should be, but where they're at, right? And where everybody believes Texas should be, but where they're at. You can take a handful of rich traditional colleges and say, okay, this is who you were in the past, but this is who you are now. And I think that's the struggle with a program like Texas. That's the struggle with a program like Michigan. You could even make the case that's the struggle with a program like USC, where there are demands and pressure at jobs like that that are not normal. And Tom Herman is a good coach, but sometimes it's not about whether you're a good coach. It's whether you can handle the demands and the pressure of the noise within. And that's the difference here with Texas, as Texas eats their own. I had somebody tell me, you know, somebody who knows the program inside and out, and he's like, we eat our own. And that's the truth here with a program like this. And I mentioned this on Monday. The difference that we saw at Alabama with Mal Moore when he hired Nick Saban, because Alabama was at that point, too, where they were leaning on tradition, but they weren't who they are now. Nope. And Mal Moore basically said, lay off of Nick. Let's figure this out for a couple years. Then you guys can jump in. But just let him cook a little bit with his own ingredients. And that's been the problem at Texas for 10 years.
And he closed the doors. Nick closed the doors, and Nick didn't ask anybody. Nick did what Nick wanted to do. Nick's also the GOAT. It's going to take the perfect coach for Texas to do that and have a voice that could do. Urban Meyer could do that. You know, I think there's a couple names that could do that. I don't know that Sark can do that. I think his staff. Listen, Sark's a savant. I love watching his offense. He's so incredible, man. Like he's in the top five play callers in all of college football. He's that kind of good. He developed quarterbacks. When Tom Herman got there, I was like, Tom Herman can develop quarterbacks. Tom Herman always has a good quarterback. Tom Herman's an offensive savant. It didn't last, and it didn't work. So, you know, I don't – Sark's personality is very – it's much more mild. And so he better find some butt kickers. You know, he better get a fiery DC that can get in people's grill and kind of – because, listen, it takes all kinds, right? Like, we need the fire and brimstone. We need the passive and players coach. Hey, I love you, bro. Like, you know, I got your back. So I think who he hires will continue to be a story, but I don't think it's a home run, but I do think that Sark is an offensive genius. And you would think that offensively they would continue to grow, get better. And, you know, if they could do that, they can at least start being more competitive in the Big 12, which they haven't been. I mean, Iowa State has taken the mantle from them and saying, we're better than you, which shouldn't happen.
You know, and I know he's in the NFL right now, but I go to what Matt Rhule did at Baylor, where he just said, I'm just going to get a bunch of dudes. I'm not going to try to outscore everybody. What I'm going to do is something different from everybody in the league. We're going to hit you, and you're going to pay for it. And Texas is going to get the players. The question is, are they going to get a couple of dudes that are just like, we want to hit and we want the physicality, and we're not going to give up. We're going to be mentally tough. Forget the five stars and the labels. We want to earn ourselves on this team. I bring this up because if you seal the borders at Texas, Pollock, and you just recruit within the state, you're going to have a phenomenal roster. But the development inside this state, I've heard this in the last few days, is on the high school level, Texas high school is such a pressure cooker on developing talent, and that they can sometimes overdevelop the talent. So when they come to campus, are they going to be the same player their freshman year as we see in their senior year? It shouldn't be the case, like you pointed out with Najee, and you could say the same thing with Devontae Smith, like completely different players from when they came on campus to who they are, right? Are we seeing kind of like a peak here when Texas gets these 4- and 5-star guys within the state that they are overdeveloped, so we are not reaching another level of talent finding on campus when they bring these guys in, because they've already reached their potential, or that ceiling is a lot smaller than what we see in major programs everywhere else.
That feels like an excuse to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just feels like I've heard the same thing, and I've heard it over and over from so many people that are close to Texas, and I get it. But I also feel like that's like saying when you go to college, you know, even if you're a 5-star, you know, you're already developed. I mean, it's going to take coaching to develop you. And like, it takes a person with a thought process and a system to match. Nick Saban's trust the process is a system. It's a way of, go listen to Alabama's players talk. They sound like him, for God's sakes.
Yeah, they
He's brainwashed all of them. So when your mindset goes from a high school kid to a college kid, and now I'm not here to be a college kid, I'm here to go make it to the NFL, and my mindset is getting better every single day, showing up, being the best, no matter what it is, off the field, on the field. Like, is that, that's not something that high school kids come in with. Not buying that, dude. Like, I think that it takes the right man to be able to do that. There's not very many of them, by the way. There's one Nick Saban. You know, mm-hmm. There's one big name coaches out there like that you can get, and everybody wants them. Yeah, sure. But I don't have expectations with the Sark hire to say that Texas is going to be back. I think they'll have good moments, and I think they'll be really good. I don't know if they'll be back.
You asked me, and then I kind of went on a little side rant there about programs, but you asked me if Tom Herman's a good coach. Do you think Tom Herman's a good coach?
Heck yeah, I do. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a great offensive mind. I think he's got I like his tenacity and his fire. I like his little bit of edge to him, but it didn't work in Texas, did it?
And no.
I think Tom, by the way, Tom Herman should go to Nick Saban rehab. It works for everybody. Go do it.
It really does.
Go with Nick Saban, with all the other head coaches, and you'll get a job. Like, go learn how he runs his processes and how he handles his business, and then go take that opportunity to go in your next stint and become a head coach. It's a little better of a head coach, and you've learned a little bit more, and we should all be evolving. We're not all finished products ever.
Yeah. You know, another guy is Bill O'Brien. He's been mentioned potentially as an OC in the conversations to replace Sark. That's another guy where he knows what he's doing, but maybe taking a step back and not gaining full control of a franchise. And you could just focus on being a coach again. Maybe that'll play a different role in the rebirth as you go back to the coaching rehab center. And that is in Tuscaloosa and what Saban has done. All right. So, you know, I couldn't ask Herbie because he's on the call of the game. Do you got a score in a game like this, and who you got?
Man, we're going Madden football, and we're putting it on exhibition mode where nobody can tackle, nobody plays good defense, nobody, like, the ball hits DB's hands, they drop it. You know, you break 65 tackles. I think we're looking at 40-something. I think this is going to be an absolute shootout, very SEC championship game-esque. And I lean towards Alabama just because it's just a trust. Like, I know what I'm getting. And Ohio State had a great game this past week, but I've also seen some ups and downs. But I think it's going to be a heck of a game. And I think it'll be a one-possession type game and down to the wire.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I hope that Fields is okay throughout the game and we can get him. No one's expecting him to play 100%. We hope Fields doesn't suffer a hit on the side. He's going to. And one side note, one thing, it didn't look like he had any rib protection. It didn't look like he had a rib protector there, which was stunning, right? When you're taking hits.
Well, he had his normal one. He has a normal huge one that he has on anyways.
Yeah.
So it's, but it's no, yeah, I'm sure it'll come. The padding will continue to grow on that side.
As it should.
By the way, the difference in the ball game is 17. Jalen Waddle is the difference. Bama wins because Jalen Waddle returns. Boom.
We've come full circle here, Taylor, where he could still bring up Jalen Waddle at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Right? And we'll see if the gamesmanship is true or not. If Waddle plays, if he plays 15 plays or what, because of course his long-term health is the biggest key here when he's thinking about playing on Sundays. Hey, Pollock, I'm with you. I think Bama wins this game. I think they're going to be in the 40s. I think that Ohio State will probably be high 30s, maybe like a 41. But I put Bama at like 49. So I think they're going to cover a game in a game like this. So we'll see how it plays out, buddy. Appreciate it. Enjoy Miami and stay safe, of course.
Boom. See you, dudes.
All right. Big thanks to David Pollock here joining us as we get you ready for the national championship game, which is scheduled for January 11th, Monday in Miami between Ohio State and Alabama. Of course, big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, making sure that everything's a go here and we get green lights and bring this podcast to you. Always a great job by Taylor on the other side. And the fellows will join us for their thoughts next week after the game. We hope you enjoy it. We keep our fingers crossed and hope there is a game in the next 5 days. And if you want more college football, stay safe, social distance, wear a mask. Talk to you soon.